This is ABC Radio Brisbane with Steve Austin.
At 35. Thank you so much. Yes, all the same price. $20, please. Have a nice day.
Welcome back to the studio to Gary Mortimer, Associate Professor at QUT's Business School. Good to have you back, Gary.
G'day, Steve.
Dominique Lamb, CEO of the National Retail Association. Seems like ages since you've been here, but welcome back.
Hello.
When was the last time you were here? Wasn't last week.
No.
Wasn't the week before.
No, definitely at least 4 weeks, I think.
All right. Well, good to have you back. And Christine Moody, founder of Brand Audits, who's been flying around the world. I believe you were in China, is that right?
Where were
you?
I was, Steve, and hello to everybody. I was in Shanghai, and that is the mecca of retail. They call it the New York of the East. I've been there before, but when you think there's 24 million people just shopping, the retail stores are buzzing, the food outlets are buzzing, it was amazing.
What did you see? What stood out? Because I know you wander around every city you
I
go
do.
To looking for retail trends and
yep.
where things are moving to. So in the, what do you describe it? The mecca of what? The mecca of?
Well, it's the New York of the East.
The New York of the East, I'm
it.
Sorry. Yeah. The yep. New York of the East. East.
Yeah. And I think it's really what I saw was it's very much a cashless society, whether it's a little fruit and vegetable corner shop, whether you just got a little QR code and it connects to WeChat and to Alipay. So no one carries any cash. You just do this with the little local places, but also merchandising. So window displays, shop displays, they spend a lot of money and time getting those right to draw the customers in. So their department stores, for example, they've got little standalone areas for Dior and Chanel, all the designer labels, beautifully merchandised, beautifully set up, and everyone from the sales assistant right through to the packaging has been thought about.
So the population of Australia in the city of Shanghai.
Yes.
And what other trends? So no one uses cash.
No. That's from the little markets. They call it the fake markets, which I still can't believe is in existence. But anyway, the fake markets right through to the little fruit and vegetable place. So we used to go down where I was staying was right in the heart. But slowly these little corner stores that sell the fruit and vegetables are disappearing. But you just go down like we would here, but little tiny square meterage and beautifully displayed fruit and beautifully displayed vegetables, little tiny stores. And you pick some things out, use a QR code, show them that you've paid and off you go.
Did you see any Australian branded products there?
Yes, I did. There was in the supermarkets. So Tim Tams in boxes rather than the looser ones, obviously for shipping, very expensive. St. Carmen fine
very
fruit.
Expensive, like how expensive?
Triple the price.
Triple the price.
This was a very expensive supermarket, so I couldn't tell the difference. Okay. I mean, very low lighting, beautiful displays. Carmen's fine food products were there. Some pasta products were there. I hunted them out. They had an Australian section, so it's really prized. So there's lots of kangaroos, graphics and things like that because obviously, it's Australian. And Australian milk products, Devondale, products like that everywhere.
Were they actually Australian or were they rip-offs? I know that the Australian-made people here have warned that they're labelling UGG boots in China as being Australian-made when they're not actually.
They are, and that was
they're actually putting Australian-made labels when they're not Australian-made.
And I have an issue with that. A whole lot of the copy things over there are still allowable, but you just had to look on the back. You had to look at the products. You had to trust what was there. A lot of Australian meat over there, wine, meat, milk. Okay. Those sort of products. But I just loved the shopping culture and the way that they look at all the attention to detail.
Now, when you flew there,
yes,
did you have to pay for your check-in luggage on whatever airline you flew with?
No, I flew with a direct flight, it's a new one, straight out of Brisbane to Shanghai now, which is great. No, I left here at lunchtime, I got there for dinner. Which I loved.
Wow,
yeah,
fantastic.
I only lose 2 hours, but we had food.
Okay.
We had food. It wasn't very good.
Wasn't extra, okay.
Wasn't extra, no, definitely.
So, Gary, let me come to you. We've learned through Australian Business Traveller that Qantas is surveying their customers, asking them would they be prepared to pay for things like checked-in baggage, food on the trip, in-flight entertainment. So what's happening here?
Yes, I guess this is very much about trying to get their pricing in line with, I guess, some of their low-cost competitors. And when we think about some of the short trips that we take around Australia, we fly to Sydney, we fly to Melbourne, you know, literally that flight to Sydney, by the time you get up and get down, you really don't need a meal. So this is about taking out some of the cost to travellers, but also some of the cost to the business. You can imagine if you've got a flight with 300 people on it, you're going down down to Sydney, you have to organise 300 meals, 300 bottles of wine, 300 coffees. All that inventory sits there on their books and sits there in the kitchen. I know when I fly to Sydney and sometimes even Melbourne, I don't generally have a meal. I just go and grab a water on the way down because I'm up and down pretty quickly. Others might want it. So this is about getting an understanding of saying, listen, we'll fly you a seat, no problems. Now, if you want to check in maybe heavier baggage, you pay extra for that. If you want a meal, pay for that as a part of your check-in procedure. So it's about bringing the prices down, the cost down for consumers and also for themselves. It'll be interesting. There'll be consumers out there, I guess travellers out there, will be very happy to do that because it gives them a bit of power to say, well, listen, I don't want a meal on that leg, but I do want a glass of wine on this one, as long as the price differential is much lower.
I'm told that. Is it the Irish or the British airline Ryanair?
Ryanair
may actually charge passengers to use the toilet. Is that true?
Well, listen, Ryanair is a really low-cost Irish carrier, and he, the owner, is famous for just being quite
outrageous.
Yeah, just outrageous. You know, and he says, listen, if you want, better flying condition, we'll fly with somebody else. We don't care. We'll only get you from A to B pretty quickly. So yeah, I don't know. About
There's an opportunity there, though. I won't go there, but there is an opportunity.
You're professional people. Would you, if Dom, you travel all the time for your mob. If Qantas said here, you can check in your bag, but if it's not cabin luggage, then you have to pay extra to go in the cargo hold. Or if you want to watch a DVD on your way down to Melbourne, you have to pay for it. Or if you want food or wine, you'll have to pay for it. How would you feel about that as a professional traveller?
Yeah, I have no issues with that. I'm probably a little bit different in the sense that I think having travel as being affordable for anyone that wants to travel is a good idea. So I have flown those low cost carriers where you purchase luggage, where you purchase food. I've also prepared my own food and taken it with me on flights and done all sorts of things like that. Whilst it's not comfortable and it doesn't have that, nostalgia of the past where you could go and, experience this lovely service and all those kinds of things. It does get you from A to B. And if, you need to be in another country and it's cheap, why not do it?
And this is very American. It'd be interesting to see whether it actually is just the national flights, because you often need the food on longer haul flights to break up the trip. I was always, when I fly, I sort of break it up into hourly increments. I'm going to read for an hour, I'm going to do this for an hour. But the food is a good distraction. So it'd be interesting to see. I know in America it's very common.
Okay.
So people have got opportunities to have retail outlets with food that's made smaller and in little packs you can take on the flight. So they're used to it over there. They pay for everything over there.
My guests are Christine Moody, founder of Brand Audits, Gary Mortimer from QUT's Business School, Dominic Lamb, chief executive of the National Retail Association. This is ABC Radio Brisbane. Graham Samuels was in the Fin Review today saying the self-regulatory code of conduct for the retailers is not working, that the big grocery chains are still bullying their suppliers. It needs to be mandatory. Gary, have you had a look at this?
Briefly. And there was certainly a Senate inquiry a couple of years back into the practices of some of the big supermarkets and their suppliers. And I think there were some findings that showed that there was a little bit of unconscionable behaviour in relation to some minor cases. That withstanding, I don't think you'd see the big majors, Coles and Moore, sort of stand back and go, listen, we won't accept mandatory. We're quite happy to sign, and they've already signed on to the voluntary code. The only people that haven't, for what I can tell, is the Metcash Group. Everybody else has signed on to the voluntary code.
Which owns sort of the IGAs and those ones.
Foodworks and places like that. Which is, they've said that we will adhere to the findings and adhere to the practices, but we won't particularly be a
supplier. Suppliers weren't complaining about them in the first place, though, were they? They weren't actually complaining about them.
No, not at all. So it was mainly the big supermarkets.
Yeah.
So would it become mandatory? Possibly, and I think Coles and Woolworths would pretty quickly sign up to that. I don't think there's many major issues there. Yes, there's been some cases, but I think that the issue, we talked about Starburst in the green room, about those products disappearing off the shelf. The first question that often pops up in social media is, there's another supermarket ripping out a particular famous brand. That's not the case. I mean, the case was that particular brand or that particular range just wasn't selling, and that was made by a very large global business. So they've got other products in the supermarket. They just removed that one. They filled it with another product.
They've removed Starburst from the shelves of supermarkets.
I love it that no one buys it for years, but as soon as it disappears, people go, but I really like that.
Now, what is that? What's happening there? When people do that, you hear that often in this game. People complain that, they're changing things. Well, all of a sudden you've discovered your love for something, but you haven't bought it for 10 years. So what do you call that? Is there a consumer behaviour name for that?
Nostalgia.
Well, I think it's also a marketing ploy by a number of companies.
Is it really? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked about it before, but certainly when they changed the flavour of the pizza shape, I think there was quite a lot of backlash, and now you can buy it in original flavour. And it's one of our senior managers that did that. Well, it's flying off the shelves. So, I think that it's quite clever in a lot of circumstances. It looks like Starburst, though. I'm not sure if they will make it back, but we'll see. The rehash of the old ads was quite nice to see all over online a couple of days
This is ABC Radio Brisbane. I picked up my paper today. I had breakfast in a cafe this morning. I haven't done that for I don't know how long. I had a nice long breakfast and I read two newspapers, and wrapped around the Courier Mail was what looked to me like an extremely expensive advertorial for David Jones, who are marking 150 years. So Dom, 180 years. Dom, tell me the story. What have David Jones done? That's a significant outlay of cash to say, this is our story.
Well, I think it's very, very clever in the sense that, what we know about department stores and what lots of people complain about with department stores is that it's not like it used to be. It's not about going in there for good service, and, it's not about seeing people in those beautiful uniforms and just kind of having that experience. And really what they've done is identify exactly who they are, and they've created almost a bit of a bonding ad for consumers that remember those times. I mean, obviously not going to remember 1838, but you are likely to remember the 1980s or even 1954 and what happened at David Jones at that time. So, look, I think that, coming into mid-season sales, this is a great way to bond their really loyal consumer or even somebody who might have come away back to David Jones, especially displaying the designers as well. So the ones that they've supported and, really marks them as being, I guess, that high-end fashion or kind of almost icon that they used to be, where you can go and you can access that beautiful fashion that you can't get everywhere else.
So they're saying our story is Australia's story.
Yeah, that's it, exactly.
And we change with the times. I think the message is also there that we do change with the times, and the people they've picked to be the icons are a very broad demographic. So I thought that was interesting. Yeah. And they talk about on the back of that wraparound, their memories of David Jones, etc. But I actually learned a few things looking at it. I thought it was a very interesting timeline that they've developed, and I thought it was very clever.
Gary Morton, what do you see?
So this is very much about storytelling, and we know that consumers now really want to know the story, the authenticity of the brand. And if the brand can effectively tap into its nostalgia that we've talked about this afternoon, or the history of the brand, it creates, recollections of remember going there as a child. I remember going to, the David Jones stores in Adelaide when I was growing up in Adelaide. And that will start a conversation. It started a conversation here this afternoon. It started a conversation around cafes and restaurants and in tea rooms. Say, do you remember the days of the old David Jones? Now, there's some celebrations happening in David Jones stores, I think, over the next couple of days. That'll bring people in to have a look at those celebrations. Mm. They will reflect on what the aim is if they have a good experience in the next few days, they may choose to come back. It's really interesting, a very clear move away from sale price, discounts, mid-season sales. There was no price message there. It was very much about historical significance of the brand, and certainly the storytelling from those key players saying, these are my recollections of going there as a child, or this is what I always experienced in the store.
Particularly positioning it as a high-end brand, they go through it to say, we started off as a high-end brand and we remain a high-end brand, a luxury brand.
Now they just need to make sure that resonates in the experience of walking through the stores this evening.
Dom, tell me about John Dixon. Apparently he's a former Marks & Spencer's executive in the UK, and his job is to turn DJs, or his job was to turn DJs around.
Look, and I think to his credit, he's done a very good job, but as we were discussing in the green room, perhaps not quick enough. And it appears that, over the last couple of years, certainly in his 2.5 years, that DJs have acquired a number of other businesses, including that Country Road Group, and he's been looking after multiple brands, and now it looks like they've moved away from that and they've really kind of split to have, a CEO of David Jones and a CEO of that other group. And look, I think certainly in my discussions with him, when he was in the role, it was very much about making sure that David Jones became that, style icon again. So it's interesting that this has just come out just as he leaves, because that's exactly what he was trying to achieve. But in terms of, I guess, figures, it wasn't quick enough.
In fact, he would have been involved with that.
That's right.
That would have taken a while to put together. Mm. Yeah. So that's quite interesting as well.
Why do we always hire ex-British or UK managers to run our supermarkets or department stores here? Is it culturally we think they would understand Australia's market a bit, or is it?
Oh, I think it's talent. I mean, we have a quite a small market in
compared
to. We
must have some good talent here.
We definitely have good talent here, but in terms of
Solomon
Lowe's
not doing anything at the moment, is it?
No, but it depends on, I guess, the size of the business. You can only kind of locate those kinds of executives in businesses of that size and in retail as a specific elsewhere. And I think there is this idea that they bring with them something that maybe Australia hasn't seen before. And often we know that international players tend to be on a different trend to us. Mm. So them bringing those new trends over is often what we're looking for.
And maybe they've also experienced the down part of some of these things that didn't work. So sort of saying, oh, we actually tried that and don't go there. So maybe they bring a bit of that as well. So.
Christine Moody, founder of Brand Audits, Dominic Lamb, CEO of National Retail Association, and Gary Mortimer, Associate Professor of QUT's Business School. Gary, why do we need to learn the lesson of not trying to out-Amazon Amazon?
This is interesting. So online marketplaces seems to be the catch cry at the moment. We know that Myer's moved into an online marketplace. Louis Vuitton, Hennessy has developed their own online marketplace. Well, the world's biggest online marketplace is Amazon. So this was Tesco saying, we have a Tesco online. You can go into Tesco online, buy your sort of groceries and your food through Tesco online. But we'll also have Tesco Marketplace, which is essentially a place where you can go and buy different brands that weren't particularly in the store, but you could buy it on an online marketplace. They've decided to walk away from that model simply because it was losing millions of dollars every year. And in fact, people were saying there's no difference in this model to Amazon, which offers more range at a lower price. So it was simply a matter of sort of a supermarket slash, I guess, discount department store trying to be an Amazon and saying, listen, Amazon's coming. And it's been in the UK since about 2000. So it's been around for about 17, 18 years now, Amazon in the UK. And the proportion of online shopping in the UK is 14.5% as opposed to our just under 8%. So it's much more common in the UK because of, I guess, population density and size to shop online. So this was Tesco saying, we're going to have a go at this and get into this marketplace, online marketplace platform, and realizing very quickly that, listen, why compete against the world's biggest online marketplace with a similar model? It just doesn't work. Let's focus on what we do best, which is sell groceries and discount department store product.
What's happening with eBay? eBay's still running. Yes, they're still selling running. Stuff. Mm. They're still surviving. But I would imagine that they would have difficulty competing with Amazon.
They're probably the most exposed, because essentially that's what they do. The benefit of Amazon is I can make multiple purchases from multiple retailers and I just do one payment to Amazon. Okay. It gets delivered together because it's fulfilled by Amazon. eBay, and I literally shopped on eBay two nights ago, I'm going to get three different parcels delivered from three different retailers at three different times. Oh. And that's where Amazon sort of is a little bit better than.
I do like their new feature though, where you can put everything in your cart and pay for it, you know, reasonably all at once.
Yes,
that's very clever. Yep. So they're definitely looking at it
on eBay or Amazon.
On eBay.
Yeah. I have to leave it there. Thank you so much for coming in, Dom Lamb, Gary Mortimer, and Christine Moody.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
You're listening to ABC Radio Brisbane with Steve Austin.